Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Shattered Silence, Stories of Recovery and Resilience. I am here with my friend, Mackenzie. Hi. Mackenzie and I have, we met like
a long time ago.
7 or 8 years ago, maybe. She's a fellow photographer, so we've worked together quite a few times now. And yeah, I just feel like I've followed along through Instagram and social media the whole way. I mean, you know, and heard pieces of your story as we've worked together, but... yeah, you've got a lot to unpack.
Yeah, it feels weird to say I'm excited to be here because I know this is going to be like a heavy talk, but right. I am excited to share so people can hear like a different side of this story.
Yeah, and I feel like, especially recently, I've just been seeing you share so much and like spread awareness of all the different topics. And so, yeah, I'm excited that you're here too because we do have a lot in common, but very different ways. You know what I mean? Like, it's very different in grief and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So, I guess with that being said, you know, I just want you to, start from the beginning, share what you want to share, and...
Okay. There's so much to unpack. I've always taken the stance that, like, if God's going to give you something difficult, like... I believe we should share it when we're ready to help other people that are going through the same thing. So rewind a long time ago, I was in a major car accident and broke my pelvis in three places, like was told it'd be a long time before I ever walked again. Like it was really traumatizing. And from that moment, that was back in 2013, I kind of took the stance of, okay, like I'm going to share along the way the struggles and the triumphs, like walking through all these different things. And I just have kind of been handed like the rarest scenarios, I feel like, on the planet. And there'll be times where I'm like, God, why? Like, and I can't imagine any other why than to share it for other people. What is that? There's a phrase that's like, your story could be somebody else's like guidebook. I'm paraphrasing here, but like your story could be somebody else's.
Yeah. And I don't know why I got, like, instant chills when you said that, because I feel the same way, you know? It's like, I've dealt with some terrible things, too, but it's like, yeah, I mean, I've felt like there's no reason for me to keep it in either, you know what I mean? And just, like, starting the podcast and all the response we've gotten, like, yeah, everyone's been saying, like, how much just all these little stories are helping them through their own traumas.
Because that's the coolest part about social media is it has, even though there's highs and lows of social media, it brings people together. Like I find stories, I've recently become a big fan of TikTok. And it's I've learned so much from people all over the world where just 15 years ago we didn't have that type of reach on social media. Like I think about how the iPhone came out when I was a freshman in high school. Like, and the Walkman came out when my parents were in high school. And like, what's going to come out when our kids are in high school? Like, it's just wild. And it's just the internet has connected us so deeply with other people, making us aware of so many things that we didn't know we were aware of. Like we're equipped now in different ways than our parents were. And so just even becoming aware of the different things through loss and pregnancy, like with things I'm going to share, I didn't even know were possible until they happened to me. And so there's different groups I've joined on Facebook and, you know, hashtags, things like that, that I've been able to find. Because after something so extreme and tragic happens to you, I don't know if you're this way, but like I want to go research and like try to understand. And so I'll start Googling and at the I'll share what happened to me, but what happened to me was like the 2% of the 2%. Like it was a very rare thing. And so to find support and to find other women that had experienced this specific thing, it was really hard. And I eventually found a group that only has 4,000 people in it worldwide. And we're just kind of in there and like chatting now. But
so good to have someone that like truly understands what you're going through.
And what I was going to say, like our grandparents and our parents' generations, they don't and they didn't talk about like a lot of the stuff that people talk about now. Like it's just so different. Like I have a family member, I don't want to reveal who it is, but I have a family member who had a loss of a baby at like basically full term. And I didn't know that until I went through all my stuff, and I'm like, why would you, like, never tell me? Yeah. Like, there's this other part of your story that I've never heard before, and I was like, did you ever name the baby? And they looked at me, and they're like, no, absolutely not. Like, we didn't do that. And I'm like, what do you mean you didn't do that? Oh, like, what do you mean? Like, it made me so emotional, like, hearing that, like, she had walked through all of this, but it was just like, nope, okay,
just
okay,
push it to the
move
side.
On, it's move fine. On, yeah, like, you, like, can try again, like, it's just so crazy through the generations of, like, where now, like, when people have a loss, like, even early on in pregnancies, they're like, we're naming the baby or nicknaming the baby, and, like, there's, like, a, you know, like...
Yeah, you still hold that special place, like, for them, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
And honoring, like, what you went through, too, I think. So it's not only just for... the loss, but also, like, the loss that the person went through. So, so, gosh. Okay, so rewind. There's multiple parts to this for me, but so I got married to my ex-husband in 2016. Mm-hmm. We knew we wanted to have kids, and it was – I feel like every couple goes through this of, like, when do we have kids? When is it right? Mm-hmm. There's never a right time, I feel like. Right. You can prepare yourself as much as you can, but – there was finally this moment where, like, okay, we're going to try. Like, mm-hmm. I think I'm ready. Like, I think I'm in a headspace. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. I was really fortunate to get pregnant right away on the first try. Like, mm-hmm. pinch me. Couldn't believe it.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Had all the symptoms, like, really early. And then obviously had never had, like, never taken a pregnancy test before. Never had gone to a you know, to confirm pregnancy appointment.
Right.
Like, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember getting a bump, like, at like 8 weeks, and I'm like, oh my gosh, am I having twins? Like, I was so excited because I'm like, I should not have a bump this early. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And it was like a hard bump. I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, well, it feels like a pregnant belly. Like, and so, and then I kind of sucked in my stomach to see like where the bump, and it was pretty, it was like about a softball size. And I was like, that's weird. Like, and so I remember taking a picture when I first woke up in the morning, like laying on my back. So I sent the picture to a friend, and I'm, like, excited, thinking, like, oh, my gosh, maybe it's twins.
Yeah.
And I will never forget, they were like, that's not normal.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean that's not normal? And then I started bleeding, and that's when I started panicking. And I'm like, I'm having a miscarriage. What is going on? And then I hadn't even had my first appointment yet. Like, I hadn't even had my first ultrasound appointment to confirm the heartbeat because I don't know why.
It takes forever to get
it
in.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
The protocol is just
wild.
Yeah, it is. So I go in and I'm like hopeful that everything's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. It's not like a crazy bleed, but it's enough that I'm concerned. So I go in and I'm having my first ultrasound, and like you could see all the stuff ish. And then I don't really know what I'm looking at actually. Like, but I'm like, oh my gosh, something's happening. And so they're doing the thing, and I will never forget the ultrasound tech said, oh, like so nonchalant, you have a massive fibroid tumor. And I was like, what is that?
Okay,
like, I don't, doesn't say anything about the baby. And she immediately is like, and you know what? We're going to go to the doctor. And like, cause techs are not supposed to tell you anything. They're not supposed to diagnose. They're not supposed, this is an older lady who's obviously had done it for a long time. And
she's
sharing
like,
this. Yeah. And sharing this on social media, all of the comments were like, they should have been fired. They shouldn't have said anything. And I'm like, no, I'm glad she told me because then it like lit a fire under my butt to be an advocate for myself after this, because I was at a medical group that was super impacted with like hundreds of appointments in a day. And so she's like, oh, we'll get the doctor and they'll review it. And I'm like, what? So then I go back out to the waiting room. I get like, I never really found out what was going on right away. And it was really anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
So finally, cause I get called back in and they're like, you have a fibroid tumor. This is what it is. And for people that don't know what a fibroid tumor is, I had no clue what it was. Mm-hmm. It's a really vascular tumor. And most of the time they're benign, like they're not cancerous. Mm-hmm. And they can grow in multiple places around your uterus, around your ovaries. And they can be small, they can be big. Like now looking it up, like people have like massive ones, they have small ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they grow off of pregnancy hormones. So mine, super, like, grew super fast because your HCG levels are rising.
Right.
And so then I'm like, well, what do we do? And they're like, we actually couldn't find the baby. We couldn't confirm the pregnancy because it's hidden we think it's hidden behind the fibroid and we can't see around it. So you have a couple options. You can terminate the pregnancy. You can just kind of let it go. Or then this doctor that was on call, she's like, you're bleeding, but it's not an active bleed. So it's not really clear if you're having an ectopic pregnancy, a miscarriage, or if you want to just like continue on and see what happens. And she got called for a birth and then like sent me home. And I was like, what do you mean? Like,
those were what was the
option. I can't get some answers. Yeah. Like, what should I do? Yeah. What's the, like, risk? Mm-hmm. Like, all the
and
things.
At this time, I think I was like 8.5 weeks. So you should already hear a heartbeat at this point. Like, mm-hmm. it's so, and if you think about an ectopic pregnancy, that's a large pregnancy to be in your fallopian tube.
Yes.
So an ectopic pregnancy, for anybody that doesn't know what that is, is also called a tubal pregnancy, but ectopic pregnancies can be anywhere. And ectopic means anywhere but the uterus, like in a safe spot in the uterus. Mm-hmm. So it could be in your tube. It could be in your ovary. It could be attached to your C-section scar. It could be not anywhere in your uterus. Like some that float around. That's crazy. It's very rare. Mine was called a corneal ectopic pregnancy, and it was stuck in the spot where like if this is my uterus and this is the fallopian tube, it was stuck literally right here where the fallopian tube meets your uterus. So it was like so close to making it into the little safe spot.
Yeah.
But obviously didn't know that that's what it was yet, but they sent me home and I hadn't told my parents I was pregnant yet. Like hadn't had that big reveal of like, surprise, you're going to be grandparents. Like no grandbabies yet. Right.
Right.
So I go home and I'm like calling my parents. I was like, are you home? Like, I need to talk to you guys. And I'm like sobbing and I get home to my parents' house and I was like, this is what happened. And they don't. And my mom is like, what the hell? And so she calls her mom, my grandma, who's a retired labor and delivery nurse.
Oh, okay.
Both of my grandmas, her and her partner, were labor and delivery nurses for years.
Okay.
And she puts her on speaker and she's like, Mackenzie, if it is an ectopic pregnancy, you need to march your ass back down there right now and demand answers. Like, you are in extreme danger if that's what this is. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have blood loss, and I just didn't know. You don't know what you don't know.
Gosh, you keep giving me chills too.
So I march my booty back down there and I walk in and I was like, I want to see another doctor because there's multiple doctors at this place. Yeah. And they're like, well, you're gonna have to wait. And they give me the runaround and I'm like, I don't want to terminate this pregnancy until I know for sure if it's viable or not. Like, I will not be able to live with myself mm-hmm. knowing I terminated a pregnancy if there was a chance for this baby to live. Mm-hmm. So I wait to see a doctor. I see another one. And he gives me a whole nother, like, crazy option of saying, well, because the fibroid's so big and we can't see around it, you could be having twins and you could have one in the, so because they checked all my blood levels, that's why I should say that. So your HCG is supposed to double every 2 days, mm-hmm. and mine was rising normally. So they were, when it's ectopic, usually, so normal pregnancy, like your HCG levels go like this, mm-hmm. and then in ectopic, it kind of like is slower and it just like plateaus like this, so it just flatlines because it doesn't have room to go anywhere, and sometimes it's just a cluster of cells that didn't develop. Mm-hmm. So this doctor was like, your HCG levels are still rising, so technically you could, another option is you could have, like, a twin in here and a twin over here, and, like, one is stuck, and, like, it just, and that could be the bleeding. And so I'm just hearing all these crazy scenarios, and I'm like, I don't care. I want an MRI is basically what it came down to.
Yeah.
Because it became, like.
And why wouldn't they do that to begin with, though? It's crazy to me.
I don't know, because MRIs, it takes time, and you have to, I don't know. So,
I feel like such a risk. Like, you're like, come on. It's so good that you were an advocate for yourself, too, and that nurse or the tech.
The tech, slipped up. Because
you wouldn't have known.
Who knows, like, how long it would have taken them to call me back and tell me, oh, this is what's going on.
Right.
Well, I was just thinking there. I know a girl who lived in Lake Isabella that had an ectopic pregnancy, and hers burst, and she was driving through the canyon to get to big. Like, it's just it can be so serious, and I just didn't know. I was very fortunate; mine did not burst, but I went into the parking lot, hysterical again, like trying to figure this out. And then I said, "I want an MRI." Mm-hmm. That doctor wouldn't do it, so I said, "I want to see another doctor." I want an MRI. Like, that's the, because this doctor was like, the only thing we can do is an MRI if your insurance will approve it. So then I'm literally in the parking lot. Oh, this is all the same day.
Yeah.
After I've gone and told my parents, hysterical, like, surprise, you're probably not going to be grandparents, but I'm pregnant. Gosh,
and I'm not even thinking this is the same day.
Yeah. And then I'm in the parking lot. I want an MRI, calling all the places to see if they have availability. So then I go, and they said, we have like a 8:30 appointment on the east side of town at this Kern radiology place. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, get me in. Yeah. So I go and I'm laying, you know, doing the whole thing, and they're sending the images to a doctor, and the guy gets a phone call, and it's the doctor, and he's like, okay, all right, okay. And then he hangs up and he like walks back over to me and he says, Mackenzie, they said that you need to go to Mercy Southwest Hospital and ask for Dr. Lopez, and he'll meet you there. And that's all he said, because they're not, again, allowed to give a diagnosis or tell you what's going on. So I was like, okay, if I'm going to the hospital, like, you know, your brain's going a million miles a minute. I had a wedding the next day. So then I am calling.
Oh, my gosh.
You laugh now, because it's just like, it's...
You're like, you can't make this up.
Yeah, no. So then I'm calling. So we're driving from the east side over to, like, Southwest, mm-hmm. you know, to get to the hospital. And I'm calling all the photo friends that I know, like, can you please shoot this wedding? Mm-hmm. Like, they're telling me to go to the ER. I don't know what's happening. Like, I don't know. I just don't know. Like, mm-hmm. can you be on standby? I walk into the ER and I was like, hey, I'm supposed to ask for this doctor. And they're like, oh, okay. And like, they're moving fast. And I'm like, I still don't know what's going on. And they finally get me back there. They start an IV on me. I'm waiting to like, I'm just like, cause it's at the ER. Like, they're just kind of putting you somewhere. Right. And finally, after I'm sitting there, there's bad service back there, so I can't text, like, anybody that's – they wouldn't go back with me back there. So I'm by myself trying to text my mom, my dad, and my husband at the time, and it's just chaos. So then finally this, like, male nurse, like, happens to walk by, and he's like, Mackenzie, you're having an ectopic pregnancy? Like, just walking by to, like, confirm I'm the right person.
Oh, my gosh.
And I looked at him, and I was like, I am? And he's like, I'm so sorry. Come with me. And he, like – walks me over to this other area, like, closes a curtain. He was like, you're having surgery in a couple hours. Dr. Lopez is doing the surgery. I'm so sorry. This is how you found out. You can sit here in this chair. And I was like, no, nobody told me anything. So I actually have a photo that my ex-husband took. I'm sitting in this chair and just, like, with the IV in my hand, and I'm, like, staring at the ceiling, like, just processing everything that's happening. Because it's just like this long whirlwind of all these things I had to do to get my answer.
Yeah, that is absolutely insane that you had to sit there with no answers.
Yeah. So then I'm in the ER and the doctor comes around and he's like, hi, Mackenzie. This is what's going to happen. And I can't remove the fibroid because it's too vascular. It's too dangerous because when you're pregnant, as you know, like, you get more blood in your body. And so that tumor also has a lot more blood, and it's too dangerous to try to remove it while you're pregnant. So he was like, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to remove it, and hopefully we can save your tube. And that's that. And I'm like, okay.
All right.
So he did a laparoscopic surgery, just tiny little incisions, like belly button and then two on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to have a follow-up appointment with a specialist about this fibroid, like, since that wasn't removed. So when you're not pregnant, it shrinks back down to, like, a smaller size.
Okay.
But I never knew that I had this thing. So it could have been there since I started my period when I was there. Who knows how long it'd been there.
Right.
So then I have this appointment, and the guy says, this is a specialist. And he says, well, you don't know what side – we don't know if the fibroid caused your ectopic, so you could just try to get pregnant again. And I was like, seriously? And he's like, I think you could just try. Like, I don't want to have surgery again. He was trying to avoid doing surgery on me again to remove the fibroid. And he's like, just try it again. Which, in hindsight, wasn't the best advice.
Yeah.
So later that year, we tried again. I got pregnant again. Like, and no problem. And super excited. Got to about 9 weeks this time. And same thing. Like, bleed started. And my levels were rising the same, and go in this time, and I, like, told the doctor, and they admitted me into the hospital, knowing, like, what happened last time.
Mm-hmm.
And fibroid is big again, and they can't find the baby again, and it's in the exact – obviously, it got – well, let me rewind. So I get admitted, and I was there for couple of days, because every day, like morning and like kind of late afternoon, mm-hmm. they were sending me to ultrasound, because again, ectopics are so dangerous, like it could burst any time. So I was seeing an ultrasound tech, getting another, like they hadn't done an MRI yet, but seeing the ultrasound tech, they're trying to see it, mm-hmm. can't find anything. They do an MRI, and I can't remember what happened with that MRI, but I will never forget this ultrasound tech. We're friends on Facebook now, and she found the baby, and it was in the exact same spot as the last one, which confirms that the fibroid was the problem.
Yeah.
And I got pregnant on the same side again, and the first time he saved both my tubes, and it was fine. But now, because it was in the exact same spot, there's scar tissue there, and the doctor came in, and I will never forget, like, my mom was there, and my now sister-in-law is sitting across from me, and the doctor came in and was like, are you okay with everybody in the room? I was like, yeah, go ahead, say what you need to say. And he said, I'm not going to be able to save your tube this time. Like, we're going to have one tube after this, and I just need you to know that, like, going into this. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'll let you, like, sit with that. And then we're going to have surgery in the morning. And I was like, okay. And so I just sat there and I just cried.
Yeah.
I just cried. Like, for the exact same thing to have. Like, what are the odds?
Yeah, you know? Like, seriously.
Ectopic pregnancies are already a rare thing. Mm-hmm. And then I had a corneal ectopic. So the location of that is, like, less than 2%. And then to add a fibroid. And then, again, he can't remove the fibroid this time.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, okay, now I have to have another surgery mm-hmm. if I want to try to get pregnant again. And my chance of getting pregnant again is even smaller because I'll only have one tube. So just all of that is hitting me mm-hmm. at one time. And I remember, like, sitting in the, like, the gurney or the bed, you know, because they roll around. Mm-hmm. And I'm, like, prepped for surgery, and I have my hair up in the net, and I'm just, like, sitting there. Almost similar, like, when I was, like, staring at the ceiling the first time. But I'm just, like, it was way more emotional the second time, realizing, like, the reality of my situation. Like, gosh, it's been another year of, like, it wasn't infertility. That's what's weird is, like, it's not infertility. It's the fact that I had a freaking ectopic pregnancy.
Yeah.
So it's, like, I know I can get pregnant, but my body is betraying me in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, one of the nurses, like, kind of grabbing my hand and, like, squeezing it. And just knowing, like, recovery after surgery, you're, like, thinking about all those things.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I have to do this again. And this time, I don't know why he did it this way, but he did, like, a C-section type scar mm-hmm. on me. So the recovery was a little bit rough.
Yeah.
It wasn't laparoscopic. It was this way. He took the tube and then I was recovering in the hospital. So I think I was there for like 4 or 5 days.
Because
every day they're checking and then healing after that.
Yeah, I'm
and
so sorry.
On top of it, they give you, I think it's called methotrexate. I think. Well, the nurses don't come at me. But that is a drug that they will give you when you are about to have a miscarriage to try to like clean out
mm-hmm.
so there's no infection. And so it's just like the reminder of like, okay, like, I'm really not, like, this is over. So then I remember my ex-husband and I feeling really defeated about that. And then, super defeated. So let me rewind a little bit. We mentioned, like, the naming mm-hmm. babies and things like that. So my first, this is, like, TMI, but I am the queen of TMI. So my first baby, we had conceived in Hawaii, and we were super excited because it felt like the big last trip before, like, trying to start a family.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting a tattoo for our first loss, and I decided to nickname that baby because we didn't know if it was a boy or girl, our Aloha baby,
mm-hmm.
Because Aloha means hello, goodbye, and love.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a little tattoo, just the word Aloha, and I got it the same size that it was in my tube.
Oh.
Which is, like, so weird to ask your doctor, but he, like, told me the exact measurements of it and everything. And when I stand, like, the tattoo is right next to my scar on my stomach.
That's really special.
So,
that's really special. I love that.
Thank you.
And that has even more meaning, like, the size and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything went into it.
So then, like, looking at that, I'm like, holy crap, that thing was in my... Like, that's so big. So then the second, I still haven't, like, nicknamed the second. Because I don't know. I just never did.
Yeah.
But I think I've just kind of, like, the first nickname I've kind of carried through the grief of both, because they were exact same situation. Mm-hmm. So then I had to go see a specialist to get the fibroid removed. So then you have to go see like another specialist, and luckily there's a guy here locally. He has a office down in Laguna Niguel and an office here. Mm-hmm. So I see him and he's like super confident he can remove the fibroid, and we go all the way down there. It's an outpatient procedure, mm-hmm. but it is an abdominal surgery. So he went mm-hmm. through my belly button and the previous scars from the first pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And he got everything out, and I asked him like, when can I start to try again? And he's like, oh, probably like 2 months. And like at the time, like at your face, you're like, that's kind of fast.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So like in my mind, I'm like super excited because I'm like, sweet, I'm impatient. Like, let's get baby making on the road. But now, like years later, I'm like, I can't believe that. Number one, the first doctor told me to just try to get pregnant again, not because he didn't want to have me go through another surgery, which, surprise, I've gone through like multiple now.
Yeah.
And then this other doctor says that I can try to get pregnant within 2 months after having a surgery on my uterus.
Yeah.
Something I just remembered. So my fibroids can be on the outside, the inside, and like anywhere on your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My fibroid was in the wall of mine, which is more dangerous. So instead of like out, like you can't just like cut it off here.
Right.
It's in the lining. So
it's a lot more risky. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you get pregnant, like there's scarring and like that part of your uterus is weak.
Right.
So, surprise, surprise, I get pregnant with my son a couple months after that surgery.
How are you feeling at that point too? Were you just super nervous with another pregnancy, or were you just like, you're just excited? You're like, this is taken care of and now I'm good.
Every woman is really anxious in the beginning. Like you're just, okay, the next week, you're kind of counting down, getting to the next week, you feel better and better. So for me, getting to like the 8 and 9 week and then the 10 week, because that's how, as far as I had gotten before. And then I was so stubborn and like so set on having a baby. Like
I was
zoned in, you know? I didn't really think about anything else.
Yeah,
and none of the doctors were telling me about any of the other things, which at the time I didn't think about. But now I'm like, what the heck, guys? Like, why would you not prepare
like
me?
Like these doctors.
Okay, so now I'm pregnant. I'm super excited, hopeful that everything's going to go completely normal because the fibroid is gone.
Right.
Okay? I am super sick, like nonstop puking. Like puking over 20 times a day, like couldn't keep water down. And my mom had, it's called hyperemesis gravidarum. Again, nurses, don't come at me if I mispronounce that wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how you say it. My mom had hyperemesis, also they call it HG, with both me and my brother. And I remember when she was pregnant with my brother, we're 5.5 years apart. I remember my mom at home on an IV drip because she was so sick.
Oh my gosh.
Like lost more weight than she gained when she was pregnant. And hyperemesis is not morning sickness. A lot of people that experience morning sickness are also miserable. I'm not discounting morning sickness. Hyperemesis is, it can get so extreme that people lose their babies, like because they get so malnourished.
That's what I was gonna say.
It's bad, and you can get hospitalized.
You can't keep anything down.
Hospitalized, they have to get IVs and get, like, I've heard of people getting, you know, IV, not just IVs, but like, I don't want to say a feeding tube, but another way to get nutrients, you know? So mine, I luckily did not have to get hospitalized. I was getting close to that because I lost over 20 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
And everyone is like trying, eat saltine crackers, try this smoothie, eat ginger. And I'm like, nothing works, guys. Like, leave me alone.
I tried it all.
Yeah. I remember my mother-in-law at the time, like bringing a smoothie by, and I was like, just holding it together. Like, thank you so much. And then as soon as she left, I puked it all up.
Oh my
like,
gosh.
It was just gone. And you wake up and immediately are sick and you fall asleep. Like, it never stops.
You're like, I just want to sleep so I'm not sick.
So I finally told my doctor, and they prescribed, like, a medication for me. And I couldn't take it orally because I would throw it right back up. So I had to take it in my butt. Like, I had to do suppositories. Because, so as soon as I woke up, I would have to
do that.
Put it in my butt, and then I would lay there and let my body, like, absorb it and just pray to God that, like, I was not.
Today's going to be a good day, yes. I hope.
Yeah. And I'm still in the middle of wedding season, so I would go to weddings, and I would bring Ziploc bags. I bought Emesis bags, like, off Amazon.
Uh-huh.
Because I would be puking while I was driving everywhere.
Oh,
it was
my gosh.
Bad.
Poor
it was
thing.
Bad. And then I remember in the middle, I had a wedding in June. And I don't, like, look pregnant yet either, like, super pregnant. So I'm just, like, it was an outdoor wedding outside. Oh, my gosh, I just said that twice. Whatever. and they had a giant, really cute, like, it looked like a dollhouse. It was really cute. Oh, like, a little thing for kids to play in. And I remember running behind it and just, like, getting sick.
Because
there was no, like, there was no time to, like, go inside the house. It was just miserable. So there was that. I took medication the entire
time. You're like,
pregnancy.
What else? Like, come on.
I saw somewhere that, like, if your mom had it, you are, like, 17 times more likely to have it. Like,
oh, my gosh,
It's not really hereditary, but there's a higher chance you'll have it if your mom had it. So if I ever have a daughter, God
like,
bless her.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, like, I've even heard of people getting a surrogate because they had hyperemesis.
Oh, my gosh.
That's how extreme it can get.
That's so sad. That sucks.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Super bad. So then I'm, like, I had a wedding up in Oregon, I think. Yeah, I had a wedding up in Oregon.
Your busy season is busy.
So, and this was for, like, a family that was here, and their daughter got married up there, and I'm traveling, and I think I was like, 23 and a half weeks pregnant at this time. And I'm feeling good. Like, I finally have a rhythm with the medication. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not getting as sick anymore. I have a picture of me, like, holding my belly, looking all cute, like, feeling good about myself. And then we get to the airport, and I felt horrible. Like, I couldn't even, like, place how I was feeling. I just felt really off. Like, I was lightheaded, kind of felt sick and, like, shaky, nauseous. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what else to do but lay down. So, and you know how they say, like, pregnant women should lay on their left side? There's some giant thing over here.
Yeah.
So I did that. I just laid on my left side, and there's a picture of me on the floor in the airport.
Oh, my gosh.
Literally just, like, in the fetal position, just trying to feel better.
Before you're going to Oregon?
On my flight home.
On your flight home.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, I was fine up there, but then as soon as it was time to go, like, the timing of it is wild because then, what, like, the next day, I was at my parents' house. The next day or two, I was at my parents' house. And I'm sitting at their counter. Mm-hmm. And I made a joke. I was like, oh, my gosh, tomorrow I'm going to be 24 weeks pregnant, which is a huge milestone in any pregnancy because, as most people know, that is the week of viability, which means, like, doctors will intervene and save the baby's life. And I said, jokingly, if anything goes wrong, they'll save my baby's life. And my mom is not knowing that, like, everything literally was going to go wrong, like, 12 hours later. So it's just really dark humor of me to make that joke
because
I didn't know what was about to happen, but it's such a big milestone for so many people, 24 weeks. So I'm now 24 weeks and I wake up, my husband at the time's already left for work. So now I'm home alone. I sleep butt naked. So I'm having great. Okay. Whatever. so then I wake up and I'm super lightheaded. And it was, like, almost like a movie, like, literally the stars, you see white, and my whole body felt extremely heavy, and I just fell back. Like, I fell back into bed, and my limbs were, like, super limp. Like, limp. Like, anytime I tried to move, it felt like they're super
floppy,
heavy.
Yeah.
Yes. And my stomach went soft, like, super soft, and I was freaking out. And so I called my mom. And I'll revisit this in a minute, but I called my mom first, and I'm explaining, because this is 2020, mind you, it's the middle of the pandemic, and everyone's donating blood and plasma and, like, all that stuff, if you remember, like, for COVID patients. My mom had just the day before donated plasma or one or the other, I can't remember, and I'm explaining to her what my symptoms, and she's like, I'm calling an ambulance, your blood pressure's dropping, because my mom had just experienced a similar effect after donating plasma and blood.
Okay.
And she's the only reason why she knew what I was describing was because she had just experienced it a couple days before.
Right.
And she's like, I'm calling an ambulance. And I was like, no. And she's like, I'm calling an ambulance. So I was like, all the doors are locked. Like, I don't know how they're going to get in. I cannot get up.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, okay, like, I'm calling your dad. I'm calling. And then they called my ex-husband and everything. And then the ambulance calls me, like the fire department calls me, because my mom called them and they call me and I'm still in bed. I cannot move. And they're like, Mackenzie, we want to confirm this is you. We're on our way. We might have to kick your door in. Like, and I'm like, okay. Yeah. Like, and so I'm just really like, my life is flashing before my eyes and I can hear my dad trying to kick in the garage door, cause it's like a weaker door than the front door. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, you're just thinking about like all the things you're gonna have to fix if you make it through this, like, I'm gonna fix this door, I'm gonna fix that door.
Oh my gosh.
And, my ex-husband did not understand the urgency and was not driving quickly, not getting to me quickly. Meanwhile, my mom is freaking out. My dad is freaking out. My dad's about to kick down the front door. And at the last second, my ex-husband gets there to unlock the front door. The fire department comes in. They're grabbing me and they are like not moving fast enough to my liking, because I'm like going, I'm like almost in and out.
Yeah.
And they're like, ma'am, you're naked. I'm like, yeah, no shit.
I can't
naked.
Move.
Like, what do you want me to do? Yeah. And they were like, I don't really remember who was suggesting to put clothes on me, but somebody, like, I think my ex, like, grabbed, like, a dress, like, just, like a casual, like, little dress to put on top of me. I'm like, just get me out of here. Yeah. Like, I don't care if my neighbors see me naked. Yeah. Like, get me out. And they finally...
Like, you guys, this is serious. Yeah. I don't care about clothes right now.
And again, I remember the left side thing. I said, can I lay on my left side? And I'm on, like, a tiny little... It's not like a bed that you see on the ambulance, because the hallways in my house at the time were really tiny. Mm-hmm. So I'm on one of those things that are, like, this wide. Uh-huh. And I'm laying on my side, and they strap you down, and then they, like, so you don't fall. And then they put, like, this stuff on you to keep you warm. And obviously all my neighbors saw me wheeled away, and I... remember just trying to like stay awake. And so I'm on my side and I kept putting my hands up like this and just going, because I wanted to try to have feeling. And I'm like, okay, if I can kind of keep blood circulating. And I kept putting my hands up, and they put me in the ambulance, and there's a tiny little window like at the top that you can kind of see out. And I lived by Frontier High School at the time, and they asked me what hospital. I said Mercy Southwest, because that's where my OB was. Not prepared for what diagnosis I'm about to find out I have, like the type of diagnosis I had, like you need a specialty team for. I should have gone to probably like a trauma hospital, but I remember on the way like seeing palm trees, and I know we're going, I know I can tell by the trees I'm seeing outside the ambulance where we're going, and they are stopping at every red light, no lights and sirens. Meanwhile, they cannot find my pulse. They are like checking everywhere on me, and they can't find my pulse. And I can hear them, and I'm in and out, and I can hear them calling the hospital saying, like, we're this far out. I can't get her pulse. I can't get a read, blah, blah, blah. So they just had like an IV on me, but they like ready to go, but they couldn't get. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, what? It's so crazy, like, how much I can remember of this.
Yeah.
Later, my mom called the ambulance company and like spoke to somebody and told them what happened to me. And she's like, I'm not here to sue you. I'm not here to, I just want you to know how severe this was and what the urgency they
the
didn't
lack
have.
Of urgency they had. Like, and, okay, you know, we can't find a pulse, but let's stop at this red light instead of turning on some sirens and getting you to where you need to be.
Yes. So then I pull in to the bay and they're getting me out. And I remember my mom was there. Like, my mom got there, and my mom told me later, like, she was calling her dad, and just she was afraid she was gonna lose me. And then she sees me get pulled out of the ambulance, and I was like black and blue and purple because I had already lost so much blood. And I go in, and when you're pregnant, the ER wants nothing to do with you. You go straight to labor and delivery because it's such a specialized thing.
Yeah.
And I go into the triage room, and there are so many people in there, and I'm like shaking, freezing now. So they have like this giant, they call it a bear hugger. It's like this inflatable thing that they put on you to blow hot air on you. And I am laying on my left side because I've requested to lay on my left side. I'm still moving my hands, and I am like explaining to them what happened in the morning and like the things that I'm feeling. And I am just, I'm crying. I'm saying it's all my fault. And there are so many nurses, and they're like, honey, you're okay. It's not your fault. And like just over and over again, I kept repeating, it's all my fault. It's all my fault. And they were like, you're okay. You're okay. And then it's in the middle of the pandemic, so they all have masks on. They all have caps on, so I can only see this part of their face. And I'm by myself. I forgot to mention that. So my mom like sees me, and then I'm just wheeled away because in the pandemic, no one was allowed back.
Oh my gosh.
So that's why I'm trying to stay awake as well, because I'm the only one that can advocate for myself.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how long I was in there, but I remember the majority of the things that happened. And there was a time when the doctor finally got there and he was like, Mackenzie, I have to do an ultrasound. I need you to lay on your back. And I, because they had tried to do it from my side for a long time. And they were like, I see free fluid and it's all the blood. I finally moved to my back and it was the most excruciating pain I've ever been in, because, and I, and then they explained to me later that was all the blood moving across your abdomen. And oh my gosh. It's just such a weird feeling, but it hurts yeah. so bad. And so I'm laying on my back. And then I was in more pain, and I said there was something, like, on my back left side. And there, I felt like the princess and the pea. They were, like, all, like, well, there's nothing under you, Mackenzie. There's nothing. And they were feeling everywhere. And I was, like, no, it's, like, right here. Well, now, like, in hindsight, that's where the bleed was. It was, like, in the back left side.
Okay.
And so thank God I was laying on my back, on my left side.
Yeah.
So they're trying to figure out what's wrong. And I remember one nurse in particular, she was, like, all up in my business, and she was so sweet, and she's like, Mackenzie, look at me, and she, like, knew my name, like, more the so than the other nurses, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like, I know you, and I kept looking at her, like, why do I know you, mm-hmm. and when they finally realized what was happening, I remember the doctor coming in, and he said, Mackenzie, I'm gonna have to open you up, and we're gonna have to most likely deliver your son, and if I can't find the bleeding, I'm gonna have to open you up more, and we're going to deliver him. And I was like, okay. And then when they finally decided, it was like this crazy, like, Grey's Anatomy episode. And they actually have an episode on my condition on Grey's Anatomy. That's how you know it's crazy.
Yeah, seriously.
The girl next to me, when she realized it was, like, go time, she took her mask off and she goes, Mackenzie, it's Angie. And it was a girl I went to high school with that I played softball with that was, like, one of my really good friends in Aww. High school. And I just started, like, sobbing, knowing that somebody was in the room with me that I knew.
Yeah.
And
it's gotta be so terrifying. I'm yeah. so sorry.
And, like, right around then is when they said, who do we need to call? And in the middle of the pandemic, they only called people when someone was about to die. And I was like, oh, holy shit, gosh. I'm dying. This is it. And they said, who do you want us to call? And I did not say my husband. I said, I want my mom.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mom, knowing, like, how serious it was to be called back with me, she walked in and she was just, like, so serious, so, like, level-headed, matter-of-fact, like, giving my history, everything. Mm-hmm. And I knew, like, I think it was in that moment, like, people ask me, like, when did you know your marriage was over? And it was, like, that moment that I knew I couldn't trust him. Like, yeah. The moment I needed somebody, him the most, I knew he couldn't.
He couldn't be that support mm-hmm. for you.
And I knew I needed my mom. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's a problem. Like, it's just crazy, yeah. like, for all this to go through your brain.
Yeah.
It's, like, takes 2 seconds and all yes. this is in your brain.
Yeah. And so then that's when Andrew's like, it's Angie. And then I got wheeled. And so from the past 3 surgeries, I discovered all these crazy, weird allergic reactions from surgery stuff.
Oh my gosh.
So Girl. As I'm being wheeled, yeah, but thank God, because as I'm being wheeled back, mm-hmm. I'm yelling out my allergies. And one of the allergies is chlorhexidine, which is something they put on your all over your body before they do surgery. And I was like, I'm allergic to chlorhexidine. And they heard me and they grabbed a different type and they literally, it was like a bucket and they threw it on me. Like, that's how fast they were prepping me for surgery. And I'm on my back in excruciating pain. I'm only can see what's up this way. They throw that on me and then somebody parted my legs and literally, like a knife, like, put a catheter in me. Like, immediately, like, the precision this woman had was incredible. Like, just grabs my legs and put a catheter in yeah. like that, put a mask on me. And then the lady putting the mask on me, the anesthesiologist, she's like, are we doing a central line? And I was like, what? And I'm like, I'm gonna die. Like, that was the last thing I heard. In a central line, I had 2 in my neck. It was just crazy. So,
oh my gosh. And the fact that you're, like, so, like, coherent still yeah. is just really crazy.
Like, all the nurses were like, I can't believe you remember that. I can't believe you remember that.
Yeah. And thank God, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, imagine, like, you, I mean, you telling them your allergies and stuff yeah. last minute. Like
by that. Myself.
Yeah, yeah, all by yourself. Yeah. Ugh.
And so I woke up in the ICU, intubated, so I couldn't talk.
Oh, my and gosh. That was another terrifying thing, I'm sure.
So I woke up, like, dark room. My mom is there. Because I chose my mom, and because it's the pandemic, if she left, she couldn't come back in. So because I chose my mom, she was there with me the entire time. I was in the hospital for 5.5 days.
Oh, my gosh.
So good decision on my part. Mm-hmm. Because then they let my husband go to the NICU to see baby. And then my mom stayed with me. So I remember waking up. It was super dark. And I'm, like, trying to talk, but obviously can't. And then I started signing in sign language. Like, I was trying to, like, communicate with them. And I'm like, where's my baby? Like, is he alive? Like, I just was like, where is he? And then they got me a whiteboard and they got me paper. And I'm just, like, writing, like, all these crazy things. Like, crazy things, like, mm-hmm. trying to communicate. And they slowly, like, within a few hours, they took the intubation out. And I still can't talk because you have to, like, take some time. And they said, like, as soon as you can, like, get into a wheelchair, like, we'll take you out to the NICU. And when we move you to postpartum, like, we'll get you to the NICU. But he's fine. He's 1 pound, 8 ounces, 12 inches long. He's doing really good. And then they brought somebody took a picture on, like, a little digital camera, and they brought a 4x6, and they put it in a Ziploc.
Oh, my gosh.
And they put, like, a bow. It looks like a bow tie. They just put a little bow on his chest, and, like, that's the first photo I have of him. I mean, he just looks like a little red bean. He's, like, because his skin is, like, so fragile.
Yeah.
And he was honestly really beautiful for a micro preemie. Like, yeah. I didn't even know micro preemie was a term.
Yeah,
when he was born. So micro preemies are babies born before 28 weeks. And a preemie is 28 weeks to mm-hmm. 36. So I get moved to postpartum, and one by one, nurses were coming in my room, like, and it was nighttime by the time I'm in there. And they were helping me process. Like, I think I traumatized so many nurses that day. Like, so they would come in, and I will never forget one of them. She was like, oh, you're pink. And because I am a naturally pink person, but she was like, you're pink. And I was like, yes. Like, what do you mean? She's like, no, you were not pink when you came in. And so then I would ask them to sit with me. Like, they'd sit on my bed and they'd start telling me, and I'd ask them questions because I was just processing everything. Yeah. And, but what I kept saying, like, over and over again was, it's all my fault. It's all my fault. Like, my body failed me. It's all my fault. Like, he's going to have, like, this long road ahead of him because my body couldn't do what it needed to do. And all of them were like, no, it is not your fault. It is not your fault. And so they were helping me heal in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. What happened after that? So then I finally got to go meet my son for the first time.
Yeah.
And I was in a wheelchair. And so my scar is, like, from here to here. It's very big. Uh-huh. So I could stand, but, like, not recommended.
Yeah.
I have a giant binder on, and I've already started pumping. Like, they wanted to just, like, get right to it. So I am just, like, thrown into postpartum mm-hmm. 4 months early. Go to the NICU. My son's in his own little isolate room because he's the youngest baby there. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking up to his, like, isolate, and I just couldn't believe my eyes. Like, I was so shocked. I was like, that's what you looked like inside of me. And I couldn't believe it. It was just amazing. And so his eyes had not opened yet. They didn't open for a couple more weeks. And they're like, he's going to have a honeymoon phase. He's going to be doing really good for about a week, and then it's going to get rough. And they said, just take it day by day, day by day. So at first it was, like, hour by hour. Then it was day by day. And just, it's different every day. So in the NICU, in the middle of the pandemic, both parents could not be in there at the same time. So once you're in, like, once you leave, you can't come back in. So if I went for the day, like, I would be there for 3 to 4 hours. And then if I left, I couldn't come back until the next day. So then my husband would go when he got off work until visiting hours ended, because they got rid of nighttime visiting hours in the pandemic. Oh, so he could only be there for, like,
so rough.
A little bit. Yeah. So that was hard. Really, really hard.
Yeah. And then... So, like, how long... did he have to be in the NICU?
He was in the NICU for 112 days. So they always tell you to anticipate baby coming home around their due date, which was right around his due date.
Okay.
So then when I got home, I remember the first week at home, I was pumping around the clock, like every 2 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I am having a really hard time like sitting up on my own because I just have this huge incision with staples because I found out I'm allergic to glue and like all this stuff.
Yes.
And I will never forget the first time we got a call from the doctor, the NICU doctor, saying like, hey, we have to give him steroids. Here are the risks of giving him that. And they give you the worst case scenario, like death, blindness, you know, all this crazy stuff. And I was emotional because I'm like, no, they said this was going to happen. But like, they said there'd be a honeymoon stage and then it's going to get rough. But like, I didn't think it'd be this fast. And you want to make the best decision for your kids.
Right.
And I remember just being really, 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 really overwhelmed. And my husband at the time was sitting at the edge of my bed, and I will never forget it. And he looked at me and told me that I was a bad Christian because I did not have enough faith because I was emotional over that situation.
Well, oh my gosh. Okay. So
there was little comments like that over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so, again, like the moment where I realized I couldn't trust him and I asked for my mom, I came home and was focused on my recovery, focused on showing up at the NICU every day, focused on pumping because that's really all I could do. I didn't get to hold my son for almost 7 weeks because he was so fragile.
Yeah.
And he's intubated the whole time on life support. And my mom reminded me over and over again, like, you need to take care of you. You need to take care of you because you can't be a good mom if you're not taking care of yourself.
Right.
And my mom drove me to the NICU every day because I was on a lot of medication after that. And she would make me a smoothie and breakfast and all the things
Thank God
I needed
for moms.
No.
Seriously.
And she really was like my sounding board and like reminding me who I was, reminding me what I was capable of. And there were so many times my husband would come home and would question like why the dishes weren't done and why other things weren't done. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? So our marriage just was falling apart. Like, I was so disconnected because I'm like, I don't care about any of the things you're talking about right now.
I need you to be my support. You need to be just doing exactly what I'm doing.
Yes. So my son was born September of 2020. He came home New Year's Day. And then in May, my first official Mother's Day. Because even after you've had loss, like miscarriage, ectopic pregnancy, like it's Mother's Day is weird for women that don't have like a baby earth side because you're like, I'm a mom, but I'm not. And so it's weird to celebrate Mother's Day because you don't feel like you have the right to.
Yeah.
And so this really felt like my first Mother's Day because my son was home and he came home on oxygen. But oh my gosh, I forgot another emotional part. The day before my son was supposed to get discharged, I got COVID.
Oh my gosh.
And I got home and I was like sobbing because I'm like, I've made it this far, you know, over 100 days, like we're bringing him home. But he had chronic lung disease, which is really common in preemies and micropreemies because his lungs didn't have time to develop. So I can't bring him home if I have COVID.
Yeah.
So then the hospital had never had that happen before. So they're like, well, what do? We can't discharge to a COVID positive mom. Yeah. So they had to have like a meeting with the higher ups on like something to do. And so they're
like, of course.
So he actually did not get discharged to me. He got discharged to my parents. But in the meantime, my mom got to go in my place and she got to meet him for the first time in the NICU, which was really sweet. Yeah. I was super emotional, but it was the best case scenario. So then he's home on oxygen for probably 4 or 5 months at home. And then I have my first Mother's Day. And I will never forget it. So my son's in a bassinet next to us in the bed, and I am still pumping around the clock. And anybody that's pumped, it is a full-time job.
Yes.
And I'm still trying. I think I was doing weddings. Because it was that weird time where, like, weddings kept getting postponed over and over and over again and rescheduled because of the pandemic.
Yes, I was shooting with you on one of those weddings after you had Halen.
Yes, because I needed help.
And you're like, I got to go pump
real quick. Yeah. And I had, like, the mobile ones that made me look like I had implants, like crazy implants. But it was, you just figure it out. Like, and there's no other option, like, in motherhood. You just have to figure it out.
You're like, we're just going to do it one way or another.
And then, So it's Mother's Day, and I will never forget, he came home from work, and he looked at the dishes in the sink, which wasn't even a lot. Looks at the dishes in the sink, and, like, very passive-aggressively, his entire body said everything without saying anything, mm-hmm. you know? And then he went about doing his thing. We go to bed, and I had to, like, spell out for him what I wanted Mother's Day to be like, which I feel like a lot of women could resonate with this. Like,
yeah.
You have in your mind, like, what you want your Mother's Day to look like, and not all the expectations are met. But I had to, like, really spell it out for him for some mm-hmm. reason. And he wanted to start an argument about the dishes. And I was like, we're going to bed at this point. I was like, it is Mother's Day, we're going to bed. Like, we can talk about this tomorrow. And he had his back to me. I'm laying down. Halen's asleep in his bassinet right here. And he snapped. He flipped over on top of me, pinned me down right here. So his legs are on either side of me. He grabbed my wrist, and he started shaking me. And he pulled his arm back like he was going to hit me and basically said, like, what don't you understand? And he said, I'm going to make sure Halen knows how to pick up after things before he's 4 or 5 years old, all because I didn't do the dishes. And it was like a fire was lit inside of me. Gosh. And I put my hands up, and he pulled his hand back but did not make contact. But he was like shaking me, holding me down. And I said, get out. Like, get out. He literally, Halen is right here, like in the bassinet with me.
Yeah.
And he gets out, and I grabbed his wallet, keys, all the stuff he needed for work. I grabbed an outfit, and I put it outside the door, and I locked the door, never once thinking call the police, because it was such like a quick, freaky interaction.
Yeah.
I immediately texted my sister-in-law and my mom, and I was like, this just happened, I don't know what to do. And they're like, should we come over? I was like, no, don't come over. Yeah. Like, this is gonna make it worse. But like, in the moment, you're so stunned by what's happening.
Yeah.
you don't really know what to do.
Yeah.
And so he left for work the next day, and I knew I had to get like a plan to leave.
Did you suspect that he would ever get like physical with you before that?
No,
it was just
he's a very soft-spoken.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just like I don't know, something in him just snapped.
Yeah, I can't really pinpoint. No, so yeah. But I was like not next to my baby, like,
yeah.
And I've heard so many stories about how long it takes women to leave an abusive relationship or a toxic relationship. And I think on average, it takes women like 7 times to leave. And I was like, once was enough for me. And with him right next to me, I was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, you've gone through so much. You're like, we finally have our miracle baby mm-hmm. here, and you're right. going to put your hands on me.
Yeah. Yeah. So he comes back home, apologizes, and is like, I'm like, let's start counseling. We start counseling, and everything was like this blame game. He like took ownership, but it was this blame game. It was weird. Weird stuff started happening, and I could kind of don't need to share all of it, but I saw that as my out. And then there was another instance, because I was like, I need to get stuff like ready to go. But then there was, what exactly? I got home, and he had been like praying over the house with one of his friends, and like had all the lights on, and was like almost treating me like I was, I hate to say it, but like treating me like I was like demonic or possessed.
Yeah.
Like he was praying over the house and like trying to like cleanse it and like pray, like all this stuff. And then he's like, okay, let's have like a conversation. I was like, no. So that happened. And then like a couple weeks later, I had my son, and he wanted to like have him sleep with him, just him. And I was like, I'm not sleeping in the same bed with you, because I was like, I'm not comfortable
right.
after what's happened. Like,
I don't, I need to sleep in peace and not have you by my side. Yeah,
and
for sure.
So I'm going to go sleep in the nursery with him, and you can go sleep in our bedroom. And he was like, no. And I'm like, I'm not arguing with you about this. Like, I don't trust you. Like, I'm keeping him with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he took him from me and threatened to take him to his parents' house and all the stuff. And that's when I full on panicked. And he took him into our bedroom, locked the door, kept him in there. I called my mom. Again, never once thinking call the police.
Yeah.
Like, I called my mom. I left her on speaker, and she's hearing everything. And I said, open the door. Like, open the door and give him back to me. And he would not open the door. And he finally did. And I take him and I go into the nursery and I lay him down for bed. And then I barricaded the door with, I had already moved the twin mattress in there from another room. I barricaded the door with the twin mattress. I lay down and I'm still on the phone with my mom, but I have her like under my ear. So it looks like I'm just asleep. Mm-hmm. And I saw the baby monitor turn on, like the red light turns on like somebody's watching. Mm-hmm. And he was watching me. And I am trying to let my mom know I can't say anything because he'll be able to hear me. Mm-hmm. But it was that night where I'm like, I have to get out tomorrow. Like, mm-hmm. I have to do something.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, pretend like you're praying and just say amen. And he'll never know you're on the phone with me. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. And the next day I left my phone at home because he shared my location. And mm-hmm. I've shared this with other women that are in, this is something that you can do if they track your location. I left my phone where it has my location. I left it at home, so it looked like I was at home. I had all my calls forwarded to my mom's phone, and my mom drove me to, at the time, the Alliance Against Family Violence, which is now the Open Door Network.
Okay.
And I spoke to a counselor there, and they called the non-emergency line for the BPD, and they had me explain everything. They sent a officer out to interview me, and then they went and they escorted him out of the house. They called an on-call judge. I got an emergency protective order because one of the parts I forgot to add was I'm all over the place.
Are you okay?
He had threatened suicide. He had threatened to kill himself because I wasn't letting him have as much time with our son mm-hmm. because of the physical stuff. And so he had a whole suicide plan. And I was always told if they have a suicide plan, take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And he had an entire plan, and it was going to be with my handgun, which is registered in my name, which is going to look bad on me. Like the whole thing was a mess.
Yeah.
And I immediately had my dad come and get my gun and remove it from the home. And so then my mom takes me to the place. The officer comes out, interviews me. I got approved for the emergency protective order. They go and escort him out of our home, and really haven't talked to him since then. So he went to his parents' house, drove off with my vehicle that's registered in my name, and that started my long divorce.
So was he, how is it with Halen then? Does he see Halen at all?
He has visitation once a week, but there was a time where he didn't reach out to see him for almost 2 years. So my son knows Brock as daddy. He knows no different. And so Brock and I met years and years ago. Our dads actually knew each other before we were born.
Okay.
And then I knew Brock's younger brother and introduced Brock's younger brother to his wife. They've been together for like a decade now. And so I've always been like around the family and like mm-hmm. baby showers, birthdays, I was in the wedding, like all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Brock did video, and he sometimes mm-hmm. did photo. So we would run into each other in the wedding industry here and there. We were always dating other people, like, mm-hmm. And then obviously I got married and he'd been engaged. And like then now, fast forward all this time, and we were both single,
mm-hmm.
Both got baggage. And, mm-hmm. But it was, he was a safe person to try to date, and not that that's why I dated him. Like, I adore him, but like after divorce and then having a baby, like I'm like, it's just scary to think about dating somebody, when you have like this other life to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he and I matched on Bumble, and mm-hmm. I remember talking to my therapist, like, I kind of like want to just see what like dating sites are like. 'Cause mm-hmm. that wasn't a thing. Like when first got married, and now it's like a huge thing. And she's like, sure, like just be careful, like if you just want like compliments, like just go in knowing that, like if you just want to feel better about yourself. And I was like, yeah. And then like the first day Brock's profile popped up, and I was like, oh. And so I took a screenshot, I sent it to my sister-in-law, which is not, well, now she's my sister-in-law, his sister-in-law, who's my best friend, the uh-huh. one I introduced to his little brother. Uh-huh. And I'm like, do I swipe?
Yeah.
And anyways, I swiped, and he had already swiped on me. Uh-huh. So then we texted each other because we already had each other's number.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, if we're going to – it was just this big moment where we're like, okay, we're already – we're going to continue to see each other at, like, family stuff because mm-hmm. of his brother and his sister-in-law being one of my best friends.
Right.
So if we do this, like, we got to be chill if it doesn't work out, mm-hmm. like, because we're going to still see each other.
Right.
And so we met up actually at his brother's house, put the kids to sleep and, like, just kind of hung out and talked on the couch after that. And then we just haven't been able to get rid of each other ever since. Yeah. So
that just naturally kind of happened, though.
And he truly jumped into fatherhood, like, head first, 100%. Mm-hmm. Like, he loves my son so much. Mm-hmm. And, like, he is 100% his son. Like,
yeah.
Haylen doesn't know any different.
Yeah, that's
and
so special.
Loves him so much. Yeah. And it's been beautiful to, like, mm-hmm. see that unfold because I was really concerned about that for a long time.
Yeah.
And I can share that with you, too.
It's scary.
Because, it is scary. And, I did same thing. I'm like, do I want to go on these dating apps, you know? And it's like, I do have a lot of baggage, you know. I still want to talk about Kyle, and I still, like, I don't want to, like, forget about him, and my son's going to know all about him, but it is baggage, regardless of, like, it's traumatic, but it's still baggage, you know. It's not that it's necessarily a bad thing, but, yeah, it's hard.
It is.
It's hard.
I remember the first conversation I had with Brock, like, the after that first night, he came back over to my house, mm-hmm. and when Haylen was little, I'm like, you're going to have to come over after he's asleep, like,
right.
And then we'll figure that out, and then we can hang out, watch movies and stuff. And so he would come over, and I will never forget, I was like, Brock, like, got three things I need to tell you. Number one, I'm a single mom. Like, you got to be okay with that. Number two, I am actively in the middle of a divorce. Like, it takes a while to, like, officially get everything sorted out. And then three, like, I can't have kids naturally anymore. Because, oh my gosh, I didn't even share that part.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So when I woke up in the ICU, they were, like, trying to gently find a way to tell me we had to take your uterus when your son was born and to stop the bleeding. Mm-hmm. And you had a super rare condition called placenta precreta. It's called the accreta spectrum. There's three versions of it. Accreta, increta, and percreta. And percreta is the worst one. It's the rarest form.
Of course, right?
Mm-hmm. And so when you have your uterus, the placenta, like, is up against the uterus, and it's supposed to come out after, just, like, come out.
Right.
When you have accreta, it, like, lodges in. It has, like, veins and, like, kind of fingers, and it, like, lodges into the wall of your uterus. And then increta is, like, more invasive, so it goes into the wall a little more. Percreta goes through the wall and starts trying to attach to other organs, and that's what I had.
Oh my gosh,
so a lot of women that get percreta, like, they have so much blood loss that they lose limbs. Like, they have to amputate limbs. Like, I was so fortunate that I didn't have to, like,
seriously.
It was almost to my bladder, and then women have to have bladder reconstruction surgery. It's insane. Insane.
Yeah.
And then the accreta in general is increasing because of C-sections and because of abdominal surgery. So the risk of having accreta has gone up because of scarring. So we asked the doctor, like, was it near a previous scar from the abdominal surgeries? And he was like, no, which was so shocking.
Yeah.
And it was posterior, meaning on the back, which is why they couldn't find it on an ultrasound.
Right.
Like, it was really, really a really rare location. And I shared my story on TikTok, and it went viral like crazy. Mm-hmm. And there were tons of nurses, like, influencing nurses, or what do we call them? Nurse influencers?
Yeah.
That commented that were like, this is nuts. Like, they just, it's like unheard of. Like, and I remember being in the NICU, and they have travel nurses that would come through, and, you know, they ask, like, oh, what's your story? Tell me about baby. And I would tell them, and I'm like, yeah, so he's a miracle. And this one girl, I'll never forget, she looked at me like I was crazy. And she's like, no, you're a miracle.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, thanks. And she's like, no.
No, but
like,
seriously.
We see 24-weekers make it, like, often, but we don't see women survive what you had. And I just didn't, it even, I mean, I'm a little over four years from my son's been born, and it's still, there's days where I get really emotional about it.
Yeah.
So, can't have kids, but they kept my ovaries. Like, thank God the doctor thought ahead and did keep my ovaries.
Yes.
So if I wanted to have more children, I need to do surrogacy if I wanted my own biological children or adoption.
Right.
So I told that to Brock, and we're sitting there on my couch and, like, you know, figuring out how to date after you've gone through all this stuff. And I'm like, I can't do this, I can't do that, and I can't do this. And he looks at me like not without skipping a beat, and he says, "I'm not scared of any of that." And I just wanted to cry because he is a nurse, and so he has seen like crazy stuff. And I remember I got my medical records out and I showed them to him, and he's like, "Mackenzie, you basically were like on your deathbed and they brought you back. Like, I had all the blood in my body replaced." It's insane. Like, absolutely insane. Yeah. So
you and your son are miracles. That's crazy.
We have a message from our sponsors, Aspire Counseling Services. We just want to remind everyone that seeking treatment should never be stigmatized. Aspire specializes in providing support and treatment for both teens and adults with mental health and substance use disorders, recognizing that these conditions often do coexist. They are an amazing resource, and you can get started by texting or calling the number 888-585-7373 to enroll at any time.
You've gone through a lot.
Yeah.
One thing after the next.
So then we started having, Brock and I started having like more serious conversations. Like, what are we doing? Like, my son is falling in love with you.
Yeah.
Are we going to get married? Like, and we ended up legally getting married so we could start the surrogacy process. Mm-hmm. So Brock and I did decide that we wanted to have kids and biological kids. So, we did an egg retrieval with an IVF doctor, and we were able to do that because we won a family grant with a nonprofit here in town called Amelia Malloy's Angels. Mm-hmm. And it was a $30,000 grant, which is incredible because the entire like process is about $36,000, and for just like the egg retrieval. So getting the egg, that's not including medication, but like I have to take medication for 2 weeks leading up to the retrieval. Mm-hmm. Then, you go under very quickly. It's like less than 10 minutes. And then they take all the eggs and then they get the sperm. They put them together. They make babies. And then like 10 days later, you find out how many embryos you have. Yeah. So we have 10 embryos, which is like amazing.
Yeah.
Some people are lucky to get one or two.
Yeah.
So we know the sex of all of them. Okay. And then we were like, okay, now like surrogate. Like, how do we find a surrogate? Mm-hmm. And we were ready to post a video, like, on social media to, like, do a call because agencies, surrogate agencies are very expensive. They are basically the matchmaker. Like, they, somebody, it's like an adoption profile. Like, the surrogates have a profile, and then the intended parents have a profile, and then they try to match them together. And we wanted to cut out that expense because it's already so expensive. So we are independent. So we're going to just post online, and then Brock would kind of like ask people if they knew anybody that wanted to be a surrogate. So that, you know, that's like all we could do.
Yeah.
And then I started interviewing people and like just getting to know some different people, and I was kind of hitting a wall. Like,
that process is probably just really strange.
It's super weird. Know? It's super weird. 'Cause you're like, okay, how much do you want to be paid? And like, you know, 'cause we didn't like, we knew we like had a price we wanted to try to stay under, but you also are like, this person is sacrificing so much of their life for a year, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giving such a great gift. Like, you want to respect their time and their family's time and compensate them. And, but you don't want, it's just hard because everyone has a different price. Like, there's one girl I interviewed and she wanted like $85,000, not including all the other stuff that we're going to have to pay for, you know, like that's just her compensation.
Yeah.
Another person wanted 30,000. Like, it's just, it's different.
Yeah.
Like, so And some people do it altruistic, like completely for free. So it's nuts.
That is
so
wild. Yeah.
And then I had a friend come forward and she was like, "Hey, it's taking me some time to like approach you about this, but I've been talking about it and really considering it for about a year. And I think I'd like to be your surrogate." And it's one of my best friends. And it, she needed a lot of time to, like, get her husband on board, make sure, like, because they knew my ex-husband, and they that I knew I'd have to have a surrogate if I wanted to have a baby. But, like, they didn't know Brock. Like, they, so they wanted to get to know Brock. They wanted, so it's, like, you know, building a whole new relationship with another person. So, yeah, the process has been crazy. Super anxiety inducing because it's like a giant science experiment if it works and if it doesn't. And then you're like, okay, if we transfer, and then you're waiting for like the positive pregnancy test, and if it doesn't work, like, you just, your hopes are up here, and Brock's a realist and a little bit of a pessimist, and I'm the hopeful one, and so he would be bringing me down, and we had my surrogate is one of my best friends, and she had a really sweet idea to, like, make this as normal of an experience as possible for us, because Brock has never, he's never had a baby, so I can't even accidentally get pregnant. Like, I can't give him that. And so she was like, what if I drive up, because she's in Long Beach, what if I drive up to Bakersfield and I pee on a pregnancy test and we'll flip it over and you guys flip it over at the same time and you get to find out that way. And I was like, oh my God, but what if it's negative? And she's like, then we all find out together. Like, this is part of it. And so she drove up, peed on a test, and she peed on two different ones. And we, so Brock had one and I had one, and we flipped it over and found out together. And it was a really, really redeeming experience, because my ex-husband had very sad reactions to finding out we were pregnant. And so I had that, like, in my memory. Yeah. And so it was really, really sweet.
That is so awesome that she would do that with you, too.
Yeah.
And it's so special that a friend would even consider, I know. You know.
So we are expecting. We're doing the spring.
So excited. Congratulations. Yeah, thank you. Oh my gosh.
So with, like, everything you've been through, did you ever go to counseling or anything?
I am still in counseling. Yeah. Still in therapy.
Therapy is so important. Still. Like,
yeah. I actually, so what's crazy is I had set up an appointment with this therapist, and I talk with her on Zoom, but because she's out of town. But I had set it up. I can't remember when I set it up, but the first time I finally talked to her was days after he physically assaulted me. That was the first time I spoke to her. So May of 2021, I've been with her.
Okay, you've been with the same person. Same girl. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, like, there's times where there'll be months I don't chat with her, and then there's, like, but I did tell her before we did the transfer with our embryo, I was like, I think I need to be on, like, an every 3 week regimen.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm, this has been more emotional than I anticipated it to be, the surrogacy. But there's just so many things. Like, I'm so grateful that I got her when I did, because she has walked with me through so much shit. Like, literally from the time my marriage was falling apart. And then she's watched me become a stronger mom, and then, like, meeting Brock. And, like, it just, it's wild.
Yeah,
like,
she's really seen the whole roller coaster,
right? Yeah, and she, like, her notes on, like, all of our stuff is just crazy.
She's like, I got a lot of notes here.
And then she's like, you need to write a book, because you have these little nuggets you say. And I'm like, maybe feel real good about myself sometimes. But, no, she's brought a lot of insight into my grief and my trauma. And even just, I think it was a couple weeks ago, probably 3 weeks ago, and this just hit me out of nowhere. And, like, I've heard the phrase, and I've said, like, grief really has no timeline. And you know this, like, it'll just hit you, like, out of nowhere. And it could be, like, something super stupid, like the littlest thing. And a lot of women, like, it's just so interesting. I want to touch on this, how women that haven't experienced loss, they're very fortunate to have not experienced loss. And I just want to point out, like, being sensitive to women that have experienced loss, because there's little things that, and it's not their fault, but there's things that women say without realizing how painful it can be for moms that have walked through loss. Even at there, I was actually at the Amelia Molloy's gala, and there was a mom there who isn't NICU, like, she's works in the NICU, she's experienced loss, she's gone through IVF, and she leans over to me, she's like, can you please invite me to your baby shower? And I was like, sure, yeah. And she's like, no, I really want to go, because I spent so many years not going to baby showers because I was so consumed by my grief, and now I want to go to every baby shower. And it, like, hearing her say that made me so sad, because it's like, some women get offended, like, when somebody's like, oh, they're not coming to my baby shower. No, there's a reason why they're probably not coming to your baby shower. And it's really hard to be, like, have your feet in two camps, like, of joy and grief, where you're like, because there's so many women that, like, oh my gosh, my friend was pregnant and then I lost my baby. Like, that you're like, want to celebrate people, but you're still, like, barely hanging on.
Right.
And then hearing another announcement and hearing about this and hearing about that. And, or for me, like, it was, I didn't I didn't do maternity pictures. There's all these little things that you're like, oh, I didn't get to do that.
Right.
I'm not ever going to get to do that. Right. Like, or, oh, I, like, somebody, like, sometimes women will make comments like, gosh, get this baby out of me. And they're only, like, 30 weeks along. And they mean well. They're just yes. tired. They don't feel good, right. you know. But then, like, it could really trigger a preemie right. mom, like a NICU mom that's like, I would give anything to get to full term, right. you know, because of the trauma they've experienced.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of things that people don't realize can be triggering. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I didn't realize was triggering for me just a couple weeks ago, one of my friends gave birth and I was just kind of checking in like, hey, like, baby here yet? Where you at? And then she's like, I had the, where was it? She was in labor. Like, so it was like within the next day or so. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're going to be one of those people that love giving birth. I can already tell. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, I've always like really looked forward to giving birth. And I was like, me too. And I remembered how when I was a kid, this just sounds so silly, but my cousin and I would pretend one was the doctor and one was the mom having mm-hmm. a baby. And then they would like play with the baby doll and all that stuff. And as I'm texting her, I said like, hey, you're going to tell me, I want to hear all about your birth after. And she's like, yeah, I'll tell you everything. And because I want to hear about it because I will never get to experience it. Mm-hmm. And as I'm saying that to her, like, it just hit me. Like, and I just started uncontrollably sobbing. Mm-hmm. And I literally had an appointment with my therapist 10 minutes later.
Yeah. You're like, I got it.
Yeah. And she was like, oh, my gosh, Mackenzie, like, this is so good. And then we, like, started talking about all of it. But it's something I'm, like, actively talking with my surrogate, my friend about and mm-hmm. and my therapist because there is a lot of emotions right. surrounding that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in similar but still different ways, like, yeah, it was – really hard for me to go to weddings because I didn't get mine, you know? Yeah. And it was just like, I remember sitting at one of my friend's weddings and I'm just like, okay, she's walking down the aisle, but I can't look at her because I just think of me, you know? And so it's just like, I know the feeling of like, not like you're so happy for your friend and you're so happy for them, but it's just in the back of your head, you know? And I
and
will
that
say,
may happen. Forever.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, even like, I mean, I went to a wedding just this past weekend.
Was there anything in particular that like
gotcha?
Yeah, there was just one thing because like the whole like the actual ceremony and everything, I was totally fine. But just watching like all of because it was one of Kyle's best friends that got married. So my son was actually the ring bearer. And so I was like, it was the most crazy thing ever to get that boy to Arizona. But I just knew how special that was going to be for his friend. And so, yeah, but there was just one particular point, like they were introducing like the whole wedding party and stuff. And the boys were just being kind of wild. And I just could picture like Kyle coming out there, like literally just being the goofiest guy. And yeah, I was just like, man, you know, he should be here with us, you know? And so that was sad. It was, you know, it's tough. But like you said, you have like, you're so happy, but you're so sad at the same time. And with grief, it's like, no matter what, you always carry that with you, you know? And even if you're still smiling, you still might be like kind of zoning out, like thinking of the what could have been or just yeah just life and all the shit we've been through, you know. So yeah, I can definitely just like relate to that in a different way. But
I had a bride this past year, her dad had passed away, and you know what they brought into the reception? That was hilarious.
What?
A giant life-size cutout of her dad.
Oh my
and they like brought him in, like it was so funny. You could totally do that.
So funny. I know, right? Here he is.
But, I know we've talked a lot, but one of the other things that have kind of caught me off guard is, like, I'm expecting, but I'm not pregnant. And so there was a party we were at in around Halloween, mm-hmm. and there were 4 pregnant people there, not including me, so, like, 5, mm-hmm. you know? And all of them were together. Like, they know I'm expecting, but maybe not all of them, but, like, most of them knew. And they were like, oh, my gosh, how are you feeling? Like, blah, blah. And they, like, kept talking, and I was like, I'm not included in this conversation. Like, and it's not – they're not trying to hurt my feelings.
Right.
But it was, like, really a weird out of body experience to like, and then all of a sudden I think one of them really, they're like, how's yours going? And they like don't know what to say. Yeah. And like, I have to remind myself, like, even when, during our NICU stuff, like there were people that didn't reach out right away and they reached out later, or they would talk to us later and say different things. And I had to remind myself, like, people only know how to respond based on their experience.
Exactly.
And they, maybe they didn't want to be contacted if that was their experience. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to reach out. And, but, yeah,
it's tough. It's
a lot of navigating.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, I mean, yeah, I just feel like grief in general, trauma in general, it's, people really don't know what to say, and you're right, it is like just based off of your own personal life experiences. But
I think even just sending a text or saying like, hey, I don't know what to say, but I'm here.
Right.
Like,
right.
I don't know how to be here, but I'm here.
Right.
Because there were people that just dropped off the face of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Like, I had that too.
And
yeah.
That was more painful to me than just
sending
a text.
Telling me. Yeah.
Like, just like, hey, this is uncomfortable for me and I don't know what to say, but I love you. Like, exactly. Just say something.
Yeah.
Like, don't ghost
like,
me.
Yeah. That's a perfect piece of advice. Just like, just be honest. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry for what you're going through. I have no idea how you feel. And I don't even know what to say, but I'm here for you. And like, just like, but just at least say something.
Just acknowledge it.
Yeah. Because it is, yeah, it was a lot harder for me to like not hear from someone that I was close to. And then at the end of the day, when we finally talked and I was like, hey, what happened to you? Mm-hmm. You weren't here at all. Okay. And they said like, well, honestly, I've been a mess about it. And I just didn't know what to say, you know? And we like cried together because he was just like, I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't know what to say to you. And then I was just like, you know, I get that, but I just needed you to just say something so small, you know, but yeah, it's really hard to navigate regardless.
You're doing it though.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you have no other choice, but you're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, it is a roller coaster. Every day is different. I've been in this really good phase of my life right now. I've been so busy. You know, keeping yourself busy is one thing, too. But sometimes it still will just hit you. But
do you feel like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it's just like, wait, I haven't been, like, super, super sad this holiday. And sometimes it makes you feel guilty to say that. Like, why aren't I sad right now, you know? But I do feel like, yeah, it's because I'm just busy. I'm occupied. I just have so much going on. And then it will hit me at some point.
How long has it been?
It's been a year and 4 months. I'm like, yeah. So it's weird because before it was like I kept track of, it's on this day. It's a year and this many months or it's however many months, you know? And I've been in a good place where I'm not doing that anymore, you know, but
I remember doing that with my losses, like knowing the date that I lost the babies. And then now I'm like, oh, it's this month.
Right. And exactly. But. Yeah. But it gets better. It's always going to be there. But I've just heard from other people that your life just grows around the grief and it will stay there and it might get a little bit smaller, but it's just going to be there. And you just learn to, still let those moments come and happen because it's healthy. You got to let it out at some point. Don't keep it in. But therapy is also very important too. I love my therapist too. I see her once a month. Like, put me on your schedule. If I wait too long, she's too busy and I can't get in. So I'm like, just roll me back into your next month. Well, we've covered so much, but I guess like the last thing, like, do you have any support groups that you go to?
So Amelia Malloy's does a support group, a monthly support group, which is really, really unique because it's men and women that have struggled with infertility. And if I didn't clarify, it's weird because I'm a weird, unique situation. I never struggled with infertility and I don't even have secondary infertility. I don't have a name for the type of infertility I have.
Right.
Like I had an emergency hysterectomy and now I can't have kids, but
right.
I have experienced all the same emotions and grief and pain and sorrow that majority of people in the infertility world have. And so they do these monthly support groups, guys and girls, and they do like a different activity each time. And I've learned so much through that group. It's been really, really amazing. Like, just if people don't know, this is a little tangent, but there's a lot of different ways you can grow your family. Like, one thing I learned was you can adopt embryos. Did you know you can adopt embryos?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So I know a girl who, her and her husband, there was a couple in like Georgia or somewhere. They had 15-year-old embryos that have been frozen.
Oh my gosh.
I think they had like 8 of them. So they're all the same genetics. And they adopted all 8 of them. And then they transferred one of them and she is pregnant with that baby. So it's exponentially cheaper than adopting a newborn. And then you carry that baby.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that crazy?
That is so crazy.
When she told me about that, I started crying. Cause I was like, how freaking beautiful is that?
Yeah, seriously. Like,
that's nuts.
Yeah.
Didn't you know that's a thing? So just knowing there's so many different options to grow your family and hearing from different people. And there's people in different phases at these support groups. So like people that have been trying a really long time, people that are currently expecting, already had their babies and maybe having more. So you get to hear all the different things.
Right.
And hearing from the men too.
Yeah.
Like other men getting to hear from men and
is
really important.
I mean, the only thing I've really, as far as like getting support, a support group, you know, I've joined like little Facebook groups and stuff. And I mean, I'm not on it all the time, but it does help to like see other people's perspectives, and people start talking about dating after like their chapter 2 and stuff like that. So yeah, everyone calls it chapter 2. Yeah. And so, so I don't know. It's like you said too, different phases of their grief, loss, some that have like literally just lost their person like a month ago, and you're just like commenting and giving them any advice that they can, but then seeing people that are like, well, I'm dating and I have a child, and so that's what I can relate to right now. But so it's nice to get some support, even if it's just a Facebook group.
Makes a big difference.
But anyways, I feel like we covered it all.
Thank you for asking me to do this.
Yeah,
I was like a little nervous because I know this is a different type of grief than other people have shared, but I think it's important for people to know.
Yeah, and I was just like, I mean, honestly, as much as you've been sharing on social media too, I'm like, I think Mackenzie would totally be
willing to share her story. Yeah,
and so as unfortunate as all of the situation is, I am so glad that we could be here and do this together.
And the last thing I wanted to add is like something I learned in the NICU is like not comparing trauma. Like trauma is trauma.
Yeah.
And like a lot of parents would be like, oh, well, my baby was only in the NICU for a week. And then I was like, I was there for 112 days. But like that is traumatizing in and of itself.
Right.
And people carry things differently.
Exactly.
And so even, I just feel like a lot of women discount their and try to dismiss their pregnancy loss if it wasn't so far along or different things like that. So I just wanted to say that. But
you're valid in your feelings and everyone has, everyone has their own experience, but you're still valid in your feelings. So.
But thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll cry with you any day.
Yeah. We got lots of tears.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of Shattered Silence. Don't forget to follow us on all of our socials on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. You can listen or watch full episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.